Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You are wonderful human beings for joining us each and every day here at the Pack-A-Day Podcast. If you're new here, thanks so much for checking us out. Want to give a quick shout out to Hardy the Prophet for becoming a brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube member. Appreciate that, Hardy. In just a moment, we're going to be joined by Carmen Vitale. Awesome conversation with Carmen. Again, kind of what I talked about earlier in the week, talking to Paul Farrington and Ziggy. Sometimes it's great to kind of get an outside perspective of some of the stuff that's going on. As I'm recording this right now, the Bengals are up on the Steelers. So again, these games are very, very difficult. I think it's always good to kind of keep that in perspective. Check out that conversation with Carmen in just a moment. I also want to remind you, I don't often ask a specific thing. If you're on YouTube and you're watching this, make sure to turn those notifications on. Hit that little bell. It's super helpful for the channel. And with all the stuff that we're releasing, double episodes, triple episodes someday, you may miss something. We've got live stuff that comes up. Sometimes there's breaking episodes. So make sure to hit that notification so that you're always getting notified as soon as a new episode comes out. Sometimes the algorithm gets messed up. Don't want you guys obviously to miss anything. So make sure you're doing that when you have the chance. Also, reminder, happy hour, 3 p.m. Central Time today on Friday. Check that out if you have the chance. That's over on YouTube. I'll also be back this week for the pre- and post-game shows on YouTube this coming Sunday, probably 11 to noon prior to the start of games on Sunday, and then immediately following the Packers game on Sunday night as well. Big injury updates for both Green Bay and Arizona. Nothing definitive for Arizona on their quarterback situation yet. However, Kyler Murray was practicing more with some of the practice squad guys and things like that, was not working with the ones. That was more Jacoby Brissett. For the NFL Network, it seems like it is leaning towards being a Jacoby Brissett game in this one, but you never quite know. We're probably going to have to wait up until game time to know for sure, which complicates things for Green Bay. You don't know exactly who's going to be the starter at this point in time, but it seems to be trending in the direction of Jacoby Brissett. What makes it so challenging, of course, is they're two completely different types of quarterbacks, and that makes it a lot more challenging to sort of prepare for, but it seems to potentially be trending in the direction of Jacoby Brissett this upcoming Sunday. For the Packers, the big return to practice was Zach Tom. Three players still not practicing, Brandon McManus, as well as LVN and Devontae Wyatt. I would think that McManus might still have a chance if he can kick on Friday and then go into the weekend, hopefully feeling better. But I would think that this is obviously not a great sign for Devontae Wyatt or LVN. We'll get the final injury report on Friday, but as of now, not looking great for the defensive line. But hopefully Zach Tom can get out there, help the offensive line, and we'll have to kind of wait and see on Brandon McManus. If he can't go, obviously Lucas Avrisik is still on the active roster and would be their kicker on Sunday again if McManus is unable to play in that game. Now let's get to our wonderful conversation with the amazing Carmen Vitale. And now we're being joined by the one and only Carmen Vitale. You can find her on social media at Carmi V and of course on Fox Sports Radio. Carmen, it is a wild scene in the NFL right now. I'm excited to break it all down with you, but how are you doing, my friend?
I'm great. The weather's finally turned. It's chilly. It's fall. It feels like football weather. I'm happy as a clam.
Yeah, it is definitely football weather. In Green Bay, there's always that feel of like what comes right after this, which is always a little bit daunting when it starts getting in the negatives and things like that. But right now, it is absolutely amazing, and it is great for football. Unfortunately, not a home game this week for Green Bay. They go to Arizona, so a little bit different. But we'll talk about that in just a moment. Before we get there, I want to just get your thoughts on this Packers-Bengals game. It's been interesting to kind of see the comments. It seems like kind of league-wide, you know, from a more national perspective, Packers won by 9. I heard like the Athletic Football Show talk about it and say, hey, it wasn't really as bad as you maybe think it was. And then, of course, Packer fans are panicking and concerned that it was only a 9-point win against Joe Flacco in the Cincinnati Bengals at home. With all the chaos amidst the NFL right now, how do you see a 9-point win against the Cincinnati Bengals?
Never complain about a win. Never. Please never complain about a win, because there are plenty of teams that are losing these games that they should be winning, quote unquote, because I think parity's at an all-time high in the league, right? It's a good thing. It's the any given Sunday mentality that any team can show up against anyone else. And it's true. It's more true than I think it's ever been. And so if you're escaping these games with a win, no matter what it is, don't complain. Like, I get it. You know, the Bengals are struggling. They don't have Joe Burrow. They had a historically bad defense that doesn't seem a whole lot better, this year. But they're still an NFL team. And they still happen to have one or two, depending on what your rankings are, of the best receivers on the planet on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, most of Cincinnati's offense was Ja'Marr Chase doing Ja'Marr Chase things. And then on top of that, the only other guy that got a score for the Cincinnati Bengals was Tanner Hudson, who I actually know from my time with the Bucks, but he has been an NFL journeyman. Like, you can only game plan for a certain amount of people when you are, you only have a week. And so if you have teams beating you with their fourth, fifth, sixth receivers, like that's the NFL for you. Like, that is what you want as a coach. Like, you want to take away their best receiving options and limit them in those ways. And if they happen to beat you with their fifth and sixth receivers, more power to them, because there's just no way to game plan for everybody. So I really think that there's a lot, like, again, if you come out with a win, just don't complain about it.
I feel like this same conversation happens every single year of like, hey, you were supposed to look better in that game. And it's just not that simple, especially early on in the year. And as we are seeing all the teams that were supposed to win week in and week out. Now, I mean, we just go through the primetime games recently of, Bills and Patriots, Bills and Falcons. There've been a variety of different games that you go into Eagles, Giants, you go into it, you're thinking like, oh, I know exactly how this is going to go. And it completely flips on its head. And it's really difficult to right now even kind of predict what's going to happen week in and week out. I'm sure survivor pools around the league are just absolutely nuked at this point in time based on some of the stuff that's happened. But I'm with you. I think it's okay to trend some of the things that maybe aren't going quite as well as you would like. But I've talked about it ad nauseum this week already. But they're two touchdown drives, Cincinnati's two touchdown drives. Both were on fourth down plays that you had to convert fourth down conversions at the end. One of which was really good coverage by Keyshawn Nixon on a play where you brought pressure and Ja'Marr Chase just said, I don't care, I'm going to go get it anyway.
That touchdown by Ja'Marr Chase was like 9 out of 10 receivers do not make that catch, but yeah. It's Ja'Marr Chase. That's my answer.
Yep. No, we're on the same page. What do you make of kind of the state of the NFL right now, where it does feel like chaos reigns, parity is king? I do feel like it is a little bit different. It was interesting. There was an article right before the season of like NFL win projections. And it was like every team was between like 6 and 10.5 wins. And I'm just like, well, that's a complete waste of my time. Like, there's going to be teams that are really good and there's going to be teams that are really bad. And to be fair, we do see some of those teams that are really bad right now. The New York Jets, certainly an example of that. Cleveland Browns, et cetera. There's a couple of really bad ones, but there aren't really the upper echelon teams right now that are blowing teams out. And there's a group of like 15, 20 teams that it just feels like anything can go on any given Sunday.
I mean, the New England Patriots are on top of the AFC East. So that's really all you need to know about what this year is like. And I think the only certainty is the Kansas City Chiefs, only because we've seen them do it over and over again. Like, there is no overwhelming case for any other team to be a Super Bowl contender at this point, which, again, I think is a good thing. And I also think this is kind of a period of transition for the league. We talk so much about this league being cyclical. This is me getting pretty philosophical right now, but like, I love this stuff. And you talk about, all right, so the forward pass is invented. And so then defenses adjust to that. And then, it comes back around to power running games and power backs and, smash mouth football. Defenses adjust. And so then offenses kind of evolve into a spread offense and this, that, the other. And then defenses evolve and on and on and on. It's a cyclical league in that way, right? And I think we're in one of those kind of periods of transition, because defenses have gotten so fast and sophisticated. They can behave like offenses in the way that they can make checks and like essentially audibles once they see what an offense is bringing. And because of that, I feel like offense is kind of trending back to some more of that physicality and the smash mouth stuff, and you're emphasizing the run game. But I think there's tweaks to it now where you're seeing these dual threat quarterbacks factoring into the run game and how defenses, like, that's kind of a way to throw defenses off these days, is basically like, all right, now get the quarterback involved in the run game. So now you have to worry about the quarterback taking off, passing the ball, or, you know, handing it off to a running back, like all this other stuff. Offenses are trying to get even more sophisticated than what defenses can handle. And so I think when you have these periods of transition where offense is kind of being remade into, you know, and making its evolution, that, like, things are just kind of topsy-turvy and crazy. And that's when you get these periods of parity that are just, you know, it looks completely random. You don't have a really good handle on who's good and who's not. And I think ultimately, though, that's cool. And I like seeing kind of offensive innovation and how we've seen. I think tight ends are the next, like, position group too, for the matchups that they present, and or the mismatches, I should say, that they present. I don't know if the fullback is going to come back around. There's a lot of question marks when it comes to trying now to best NFL defenses, which are at, you know, a level that we haven't seen before. I mean, they're so good. NFL defenses are so good these days. And I think that's what you're seeing, is when you have a kind of predominantly defensive league, then that this is what happens, is like it, teams get blown out by teams they shouldn't. Teams get, you know, or there's like a ton of one score games where like it really could go any which way. I mean, obviously, like, I'm in Chicago too, and Bears fans are really excited about being 3-2. But they're two plays away from being 1-4. But I think that could be said about a lot of teams in the league, where it's the margin for error is just that much smaller when you have this much parity.
And that's where I'm at. For me, the margin of error is so incredibly thin. And a couple other things on top of it. I don't think offensive line play is really great right now around the NFL. And I really do think defensive line play and some of just the premier edge rushers that you see in the pass rush plans week in and week out, it feels like defensive lines and pass rush is ahead of pass protection right now. I think that is ripe for chaos, because you just don't know how that's going to wreak havoc through the course of the game. And then the other thing I'll say too, is I think the change in special teams rules in two different ways have really changed this in a significant way. One, obviously the new kick return rules, where we're seeing more kick returns and you're seeing a high variance of some teams getting caught back at their own 20 and others returning it past the 35, or getting some of those situations where they get the fair catch at the 35 and you get the ball at the 35 or past the 35. And then the other rule takes into place where they've changed the kicking balls, where it's added 5 to 10 yards of distance. And we're seeing 55, 60, 65 yarders hit with relative ease at the moment. And all of a sudden you get some point production now where we didn't really see it before, where like these 20, 25 yard drives after a fair catch are all of a sudden amounting into 3 points, where before they didn't. That has swung things. And not only that, but the amount of block kicks that are happening as well, where these things are swinging, and you just get, again, all of these sort of things that are a powder keg for chaos in the NFL. And then you add in just a random turnover here or there, that one ball bounces one way or the other and it completely changes the outcome. Yeah, these margins are insanely razor thin. And at any given moment, one of those plays can completely spin a game on its head. And you don't have to look further than Packers-Browns going back to week 3, where even after some chaos in that game, the Packers are set up for a game-winning field goal. Looks like they're going to pull this thing out. A field goal block gets them in range. They kick the field goal. And all of a sudden, a Packers win turns out into a Packers loss in the blink of an eye. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, you and I make decisions every single day, but on Prize Picks, being right on those decisions can get you paid. Don't miss any of the excitement this season on Prize Picks, where it is good to be right. It's time to start getting ready for week 7. Yes, week 7 already, as Green Bay is set to take on a dangerous Arizona team in the desert this Sunday. And let's just say I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on the top tight ends for both teams in this game. Elsewhere in week 7, I'm going with a big game from Justin Jefferson and a dominant performance from CJ Stroud. Here's the best part. Prize Picks is the only app that offers stacks, meaning that you can pick the same player up to three times in the same lineup. Want to pick more on CJ Stroud's passing yards, rushing yards, and touchdowns? Now you can pick all of them in the same lineup only on Prize Picks. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today using code Packaday to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code Packaday to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Don't forget to use that code Packaday. Prize Picks. It's good to be right.
Yeah. And I mean, like, you're talking about these razor thin margins and how all of these games are coming down to the wire. I mean, the witching hour on NFL Red Zone is as good as it's ever been.
It really is.
And so, but I think bringing up special teams is a really good point, because 3 points can sway a game. A blocked kick sways an entire game. That's what these games are coming down to. And so if you can win in that third phase of the ball, it's never been more important. So I think that's a really good point. And I really, like, I love maximum chaos. I root for maximum chaos. I love, like, chaos is like where I thrive when you talk about this league, because it just also, like, makes our jobs just so superfluously silly, because you're just like, we're trying to project things and we're trying to think about things and analyze things. And at the end of the day, it's like, we don't know anything. It's awesome. I love that. And I love trying to find patterns and find just kind of the way that things are, like, trending and why things are happening and all that other stuff. Like, I think trying to explain it all is where I really love doing that kind of stuff, because there is a reason. Like, at the end of the day, while we're saying all of this is random and whatever, it's not. There's a reason for everything. And, like, it may take a while to kind of uncover what those reasons are, whether it is the fact that the game is evolving in a certain way, or, yeah, rule changes have made it this way. And so, like, you have this domino effect of, like, okay, well, the margin for error is small, parity is at an all-time high, there were these rule changes, and that, you know, influences the outcome in this way. Like, it's just, there's a reason behind it, and it's just fun trying to find it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Meanwhile, I want to give you credit, because you were one of the first purchasers of property on Jordan Love Island and buying stock in Jordan Love and his success in the NFL. Obviously, he's had a really nice start to the season. How have you viewed Jordan's season so far, and where he's at kind of in the, you know, I don't know if I want to say upper echelon of quarterbacks, but just where you kind of see him right now in the NFL?
I mean, statistically, he is in the upper echelon of quarterbacks. Yeah. He leads the league in EPA per dropback. He's tied with Daniel Jones, by the way, among qualified passers. But
hey, just a really quick timeout. I just want to give a huge shout out to the Minnesota Vikings, who had Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones in their building a year ago. And they're like, nah, we're good. We're going to go in a different direction. And both of them are just bawling the heck out. So, sorry, on timeout. Go ahead.
No, I mean, we can get to that in a second, though, when we talk about this J.J. McCarthy, Carson Wentz debate. Yeah. That's apparently, like, we'll get there. But, I mean, the fact that Daniel Jones is leading or at least top five in every major passing metric across the league is wild. And I think it's another testament, again, to get more philosophical about actually something Kevin O'Connell said, which is, I think organizations fail quarterbacks more than quarterbacks fail. And that could not be more true. You see it over and over again with these guys that get second chances in really good situations. And, you know, they all of a sudden are like good. And you're like, well, yeah, he was a top pick for a reason, or a top five pick, whatever it was. It just makes so much sense that, like, you know, situations matter. But going back to Jordan Love, I mean, yes, leading the league in EPA per dropback. What I really love is just his processing power in so many ways, because 23.5% of his passes are explosive passes. That's the second highest rate in the league behind only Lamar Jackson, the MVP Lamar Jackson. So, And you know, I know the Ravens are struggling and yada, yada, but it's not Lamar's fault. Jordan Love is, I mean, like, that is a testament to the way that he got to sit before he had to enter the league, the situation he was brought into when he finally was named the starter, the fact that he was given ample time to ramp up to that, because that decision was made early in the offseason in order to, like, usher him into that era. I mean, I think Matt LaFleur and the Green Bay Packers, Brian Gutekunst, they all deserve a lot of credit for the situation that Jordan Love came into. The way that they handled Jordan Love at all, like drafting him, letting him sit. There are so few organizations that have the patience that the Green Bay Packers do when it comes to developing quarterbacks, which is why I was one of those first people on the Jordan Love train, because we've seen it over and over again in this league that if patience is afforded to these guys, that it only pays dividends. And the fact that these guys are allowed to kind of grasp the mental side of things, take those mental reps. And then if they're put in good situations, because this is an elective change, which it was for the Green Bay Packers, then like that's the best of all worlds. And, you know, if you have a modicum of talent, you can succeed in an environment like that. So it wasn't even that I was like, I had some sort of premonition on Jordan Love. Obviously, like, I'd watched him in college and I know that he has the talent and, you know, he wouldn't have been taken where he was if he didn't. But it was more about the fact that he was being set up to succeed in every way that he possibly could have been, that I was like, of course this is going to work for the Green Bay Packers again. Like, of course they're going to have the third generational quarterback, you know, in succession from like whatever. Like it's happened my entire life. Why would I think it would stop? Why do I think it would stop now when they're still doing things the same way and it clearly works? So, I mean, I'm still a believer like in Jordan. I'm even more of a believer in Jordan Love now after seeing him and the way that he has played in the league and his talent level. And again, it's not just his arm strength. It's not just the fact that he can scramble and he's mobile. It's his processing power that really sold me on him. And the fact that he has a plethora of options at on any given play, and he's able to pick through and kind of go through his progressions or figure out where he needs to go with the ball, what the throw is, not just a throw that'll work. Where's the throw, like the throw? And that's what he's so good at identifying. And so I can't say enough about Jordan Love. And yeah, I told y'all, I said so.
I'm glad you said that, because I don't think he gets enough credit for his decision-making, both pre-snap and post-snap, knowing where to go with the football and then executing on that. I think he's done a tremendous job with that overall. I just kind of go back to the quarterbacks too. Like, it's like one of the best market efficiencies right now is not taking the quarterback early in the draft, which has been a really difficult thing. And we're seeing coaches get fired, like the Cam Ward situation. Like, these quarterbacks are going into really bad spots. It's finding the quarterback after they failed in the first spot and picking them up. We saw Mac Jones so far this year for San Fran look really impressive. Of course, Daniel Jones, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, Jared Goff is sort of an example of that as well. I know he's not having a good year this year, but Geno Smith in the past has looked really well after going to his second spot. So yeah, if you can find that quarterback after they've kind of had that quote unquote failure in their first spot, and then they go somewhere else and get in the right situation with the right coaches and maybe don't have all that pressure and have had some time to marinate in a couple NFL offenses, it seems to be much better than everything that comes with being that first time starting quarterback. It's really quite interesting to see how that goes. And to your point with Jordan, the ability to sit there and learn and maybe not have to have those early mistakes or failures where he's thrown into the fire, where it has to go to a second team. The fact that he can sit there and learn behind Aaron and then get his opportunity in Green Bay.
You don't have obviously that immediate pressure. The last three quarterbacks that have been taken first overall have had their head coach fired in their first season.
Yep.
By the way, like it's such a testament. It's such a stark testament that there's no argument against it, that like environment matters so heavily and so tremendously. And to get the best out of these guys, you have to be patient, because this is not the same. Like, the college game may look similar, you know, as a fan when you're watching the game, but it is so drastically different. I cannot express how different it is when you are playing that game and when you are coaching that game, even how different it is than the league. And we should be giving these guys a little bit more grace and a little bit more of a runway before we put the weight of a franchise on their shoulders. But that's just not how the NFL works.
We'll come back to the Packers here in just a second, but since we kind of, you know, teased it already, the Vikings in a very interesting decision this week with that decision between J.J. McCarthy and Carson Wentz. We're recording this early on Thursday morning. On Wednesday afternoon, just kind of the latest update was that both are going to practice this week, and he seemed kind of non-committal on a starter. That's a really interesting situation in Minnesota.
I really think that the not committing to who's going to be a starter is based entirely on the health of J.J. McCarthy, because okay, I don't think that there is any sort of thought that they are going to bench J.J. McCarthy for Carson Wentz. We've seen it over and over again that Kevin O'Connell is able to squeeze every ounce of talent out of these quarterbacks. But if they didn't keep Sam Darnold after the season that he had, why would you keep Carson Wentz? It doesn't make any sense. He is not the long-term solution. He's not anybody's long-term solution. That's not why he was brought in. He was brought in to be a high-end backup in case something happened to J.J. McCarthy, and it did. And I don't think that you like the Minnesota Vikings have shown that they have a plan and they're not veering from it. Like, that was, again, getting rid of Sam Darnold, letting him walk instead of paying him. That was an indication that they are sticking with their plan to develop JJ McCarthy. And I think there has been a lot of development that's gone into JJ, and that they do believe in him if he can stay healthy. Now, that's the big question, and that's why you have those high-end veteran backups, but I think it's just health-wise. So I think that they are going to be cautious with him, because, again, if you're thinking about, if you think of it from the Minnesota Vikings perspective, you've invested this much in JJ McCarthy already. You have a long-term plan for him to be your starter. So you have to think in that way when you're talking about, all right, yes, are we anxious to get him back because we need this development to continue? Absolutely. But it's not going to serve anyone if he comes back and he re-aggravates that injury and then has to sit out again. So you'd rather take, you know, one more game to be cautious than, it, you know, maybe cost him a couple more games in the season and interrupt his development yet again. So I don't think that there's anything behind this other than, is JJ fully healthy? Like 100%. Because most guys, and to be fair, most guys come back way before they're 100%.
Yep.
But I think when you're talking about, again, a long-term investment like the Minnesota Vikings have made in JJ McCarthy, you have to make sure that he is 100% before you let him back out there.
No, that makes a ton of sense. Could be a little subterfuge as well of not trying to give Philadelphia more information on who's going to be starting in that game.
Yeah, make them prepare for two quarterbacks. Why not? That's exactly what you...
Green Bay is going through it right now with Kyler Murray and Jacoby Brissett as well. So yeah, you're always trying to keep the opposing defensive coordinator on their toes for sure. That's a really interesting game, Philly and Minnesota this week, though. That's one that I'm going to be keeping an extra eye on. And for Packers fans, I think you kind of just want Minnesota to win that, but that's an interesting conversation as well. If Philly could spiral, we saw a couple of years ago that when they spiral hard, and I still think they're going to bounce back, but that's a very interesting game this week. That's one I'm going to keep an extra eye on.
Forgotten though that like vibes were really bad last year at this time with the Philadelphia Eagles, despite the fact that they were winning too.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest argument, because like I had a ton of doubt about last year with the Eagles because of the vibes just being so bad, and because you had guys like coming out and saying things, and like you had Nick Sirianni like mouthing off to fans, like whatever, like. Vibes were bad last year, and then they got it together when it mattered and they won the Super Bowl. So like I struggle to, especially if they're still winning games, like I'm not worried about the vibes in Philly as bad as they might be, because I've seen them overcome that before.
Yep.
But I do think it is going to be very interesting, because I think that Brian Flores and what he can do against kind of some of these more mobile quarterbacks. I mean, it's feast or famine, I feel like, with the way that he, you know, obviously he blitzes at one of the highest rates in the league, right? And that can, if the blitz doesn't get home, then a quarterback like Jalen Hurts can have a field day, right? Like you beat the blitz and you beat, like, you can scramble, you can run yourself, or, you know, if you can beat a guy, you know, or you can beat the players coming at you and you can get it to your receiver, even if it's a short kind of pitch and catch, that receiver has no one in front of him because you've loaded the box and you're bringing everybody against Jalen Hurts. So if that doesn't, like, if you don't get home with those blitzes, they can burn you really, really bad. However, if you can get home, that can make it can make Jalen Hurts' day a living nightmare. And that's something that obviously Brian Flores has a lot of, you know, and he's got a lot of experience. So I'm very interested with you. I'm very interested to see this game and just how these two teams kind of strategize against each other and scheme up against each other, because I think it's a really good matchup.
Per Warren Sharp, the Vikings have the toughest remaining schedule in the NFL too. So they could use a win or two here to help them. But it could spiral quick if they start losing on their side of things as well. So again, very, very interesting game there. Let's get back to Packers Cardinals. Fun game here. You mentioned how tight ends are cheat codes. Two really good tight ends in this game: Tucker Kraft for Green Bay, Trey McBride for the Cardinals. McBride had 8 catches on 8 targets last year against Green Bay, almost 100 yards, and was really impressive and dominant against that Packers secondary. What do you see in this one? What are you watching for, and what could swing the game in your opinion? We'll be right back.
Yeah, I mean, I think that has to be public enemy number one is Trey McBride for the Green Bay Packers. You have to figure out who to put on him. And it's hard, too, because he really is just one of those real complete tight ends. He's a big guy, but he moves like a receiver in so many ways. And that's why they gave him the big contract. And whether or not it's Kyler Murray or Jacoby Brissett, I mean, tight ends in general are such safety blankets for quarterbacks. And you know, because they're big targets, they got big catch radiuses. You know, you throw them a 50-50 ball, they can come up with it. Especially, you know, the ones that can run too. All you need is that little play to the flat and you throw it out there and then boom, like he's going to break a couple tackles and get you a first down pretty much every time. So that is, to me, you need to figure out a way to, you know, scheme against Trey McBride. I think that the Packers are more than capable of doing that just because of, you know, the fact that they know how to use tight ends offensively themselves. So theoretically, you know, your defense would know how to contend with that. That's kind of what the game comes down to for me is just, what do you do against Trey McBride?
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, is can this Packers defense finally generate some turnovers? It's been really difficult. They have two interceptions on the season, no forced fumbles. And when you talk about a team that, you know, maybe you want to see start blowing away some teams or just getting some easier victories or having an easier path to victory, at least getting some turnovers would go a long way. They're now negative in the turnover ratio through the course of the season. And that's not obviously a great thing when you want to be a contender, Super Bowl contender, et cetera. You have to start flipping that turnover ratio in your favor. Maybe this week, whether it's against Kyler Murray or Jacoby Brissett, Green Bay can start getting that going in the right direction.
Yeah, I would think so. And it's just funny because it's such a stark contrast from last year. But I do think, you know, there's a lot more pressure that the front is generating. And I mean, that's not saying a whole lot because obviously that was a place that Green Bay wanted to get better this year. And you get a guy like Micah Parsons, and that's kind of the expectation is that you live on that. But what that's supposed to do is then, you know, add to some errant throws that are thrown into the secondary. And you have such a good secondary in Green Bay that I feel like it's one of those things where like the dam needs to break. Like you just, once you break the dam and it, like it should come, turnovers should come in bunches. They always do as it is. But I feel like you need to like get over that hump first and just get that first. I mean, they have a couple, but get, you know, that first turnover game. And then like, I think you'll be set. And it's funny. You're right. Like the turnover margin is in the negative, and it's not because the offense is giving the ball away a whole lot. I mean, what, Jordan Love has just two interceptions on the season so far. So I like, especially with how many risks Jordan takes, that's great. Like he's playing, again, we already talked about it. He's playing wonderfully, but you need the defense to hold up their end of the bargain.
As of recording this, Packers still listed as 6.5-point favorites. Don't need to score anything like that, but how do you feel about this game for Green Bay?
Yeah, I mean, again, just get out with a win. I don't care how it happens. It's still a tough place to play. I wonder if they'll open the roof or not. In Arizona, because a lot of times they don't, because they want to keep the sound in. But I also have to think that there's going to be a lot of Green Bay Packer fans in Arizona. That's a destination kind of game. So I would bet that they actually try to open the roof, because if it's not terribly hot, I don't know what the temperature's been like in Phoenix these days, but I feel like there's gonna be a lot of Packers fans there. So like closing the roof is only going to keep the sound in for the Packers. And if that's the case, go ahead, like, you know, be the X factor, Packers fans, for Green Bay on the road.
It's supposed to be 86 degrees and sunny, apparently, in Arizona this Sunday. So
Probably going to close the roof. Okay. All right.
And we'll see who that benefits, if that's a benefit for Green Bay or a benefit for Arizona. Green Bay has been really bad with their silent count and with any sort of crowd noise whatsoever. So that's a huge reason why they don't have a win on the road yet. Hopefully they can pick up that first road win this upcoming week. Really quick, before we get you out of here, one of the other really fun matchups, Monday Night Football, Bucks-Lions. Kind of surprised the Lions are 5.5-point favorites in this one, especially the way their secondary is kind of obliterated. Now, Tampa has a ton of injuries as well, but any thoughts on that game real quick?
Yeah, no, I can't believe the line is that big, because Baker Mayfield proved it last week that he doesn't need his first, second, third, or fourth receivers for that matter in order to win a game. And he, like, through sheer force of will, I don't know that there's a more fun player to watch, honestly, in the league right now than Baker Mayfield. So. Like, he is just an absolute psychopath in the best, like, compliment. And you know, that defense, I mean, the defense is hurting for Tampa too. Like they have just a rash of just incredibly unfortunate injuries, but they're finding ways to get it done, because I think a lot of it has to do with the coaching staff there and just how experienced they are and the way that they're able to adapt like that. And but the same can be said for the Detroit Lions, because this rash of injuries that they have too, that's nothing new to them. They have like 1.5 starters that's going to start for their secondary right now. But that's not any, like, that's what happened last year, that it happened the year before. It's not anything new to this coaching staff to figure out how to kind of scheme around that. So I would expect a ton of pressure coming from that defensive front in Detroit on that offensive line in Tampa. But the offensive line has gotten a lot healthier in Tampa. So, you have Tristan Wirfs back, and that kind of put all the puzzle pieces back together, because they had just multiple guys out of position for a few games there to start the season. But now they're pretty healthy along the offensive line, and they're playing like it too. So I can't wait for this. I think it's going to be just, these two teams always play each other really well. And I can't wait for it.
Speaking of fun players to watch, Tristan Wirfs, one of the best in the league. I know offensive line isn't like one of those sexy positions where you tune in to watch.
Who says? It is absolutely sexy. Those are the big sexies.
I agree. That's my bad. That's on me. I'll take the L on that one. No, he's an absolute blast to watch, and I'm really looking forward to this matchup as well. So a couple really fun matchups in the NFC North this week, including, again, that Vikings Eagles game, as well as Lions and Buccaneers. Saints Bears, maybe not the same energy, but yeah. That should be a fun one. Spencer Rattler playing some good football, so we'll keep an eye on that one as well. Carmen, I cannot thank you enough. Tell us where we can find all of your incredible work.
Yeah, I host Fox Football Saturdays on Fox Sports Radio from, 3 to 5 Central. Yeah, okay. 3 to 5 Central. And then I you can follow me on social media, Carmy V. It's at the bottom of the screen, wherever it is, on all socials, and keep up with what I'm doing there.
Yeah, go follow her on X as well as over on Blue Sky. Make sure you're checking her out over on Fox Sports Radio as well. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL, and of course the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for Carmen and I today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.